Alright, you are listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio. I'm Matthew Bosler.
And I'm Luke LeVanway. We're going to talk currencies and commodities for a bit. On the line to give us some insight is Dennis Gartman, author of the Gartman Letter. Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be on here. Always my pleasure.
Now, in June, you predicted that Germany would leave the Eurozone in about 2 years. Have you shortened that timeline at all?
No, not really. It takes some time for these sorts of things to work their way through, but simply put, the problems that Europe is facing at this moment is, as I like to say, after you've had your third beer and truth starts to flow, hardworking, fiscally responsible, saving-type Germans are not going to continue to pay for profligate, non-working, short-time vacation-taking Greeks. That's just the way it is. And the Germans are about up to here with the cost of what the European Union has cost them. Remember, it's only been 20 years since they had to pay for bringing their cousins, the East Germans, back in. Now they're being forced to pay for the Greeks, and this is really not going over very well. So how long will it take for the European Union to break apart? 2 years or more. There's an awful lot of political capital that has been expended that nobody really wants to right down to zero, but that's essentially what has to be done.
Dennis, go ahead, Matt.
Dennis, what's your opinion on sort of the moves in Italian bonds that we're seeing this week? A lot of increased focus on Italy and Spain, a little bit of worry over some of these larger economies. Do you think this is sort of a temporary thing that we're going to see those bond spreads sort of subside once Greece comes back into the spotlight here in the short term?
No, I think all of the spreads for all of the southern European nations are probably going to continue to widen relative to Germany. I think any narrowing of those spreads relative to German interest rates will be an opportunity for somebody who owns Spanish debt, Italian debt, Greek debt, Portuguese debt to get rid of it. I think a year from now the spreads will probably even be wider than where they are now.
So perhaps what we've seen this week is marking a major shift in the investor sentiment in the Eurozone.
That's what I think.
Now, you mentioned that some people in Germany are sort of getting fed up with the bad financial policy on the part of the periphery. What do you think about investor attitude here? You know, this week we started to see some talk of speculators attacking the Italian bond spreads. Is that something that could be a bigger problem?
Well, I'm not sure whether it's speculators or whether it's investors liquidating positions. To me, that's not important. To me, what is important is the fact that the whole idea of the European Union was fallacious from its outset, and now the manner in which Greece is, for all intents and purposes, going to have to default. It's whether they call it an actual default or not is up to rhetoric. But Greece is essentially going to default, and so too shall Portugal. And so too shall Italy. That's the important thing. How does one trade it? How does one speculate in it? How does one guess who is trading or speculating in it? That's speculation of the rankest sort. All I can tell you is I think that the composition, the philosophy of the European Union has made no sense all along, and now you're seeing those fissures begin to widen and become worse.
I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, haven't we seen a willingness on the part of Eurozone politicians to sort of do whatever it takes up to this point to keep things floating, to sort of extend and pretend, so to speak?
Didn't politicians in 1855, 1860, 1861 attempt to do the same thing here in the United States before we finally broke apart? Yes, they're going to do everything within their power, absolutely everything within their power, to keep the union together, because it is a political animal. The political forces in Strasbourg, the political forces in Brussels, the political forces in Paris, even the few political forces in Berlin, have expended a lot of political capital to make this thing work, and they're not going to give up on it easily. To think that they will, to think they'll just throw their hands up and throw it overboard is patently absurd. Of course they won't. They have a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of their history, a lot of their biographies tied up in this thing. They're not going to let it go easily.
So you don't necessarily lend a lot of credence to like an idea of a sort of two-tiered Eurobond system, something like that, that could sort of, you know, put these core and periphery nations in different baskets while still preserving the Eurozone?
No, I don't think that that's possible. I think that there will be, I think eventually what will happen is the northern core, the people who really hammered this deal together coming out of the old coal and steel union from the 1950s and 60s, Belgium, France, Germany, Luxembourg, they'll stick together. They'll make it. There will be at some type in or sometime in the future, who knows when that shall be, there will be a northern euro. It'll probably be called a euro. The other countries, Greece, Spain, Portugal, will have to go back to their own currencies. Portugal will have the escudo back. Greece will have the drachma back. Italy will have its lira back. They need their currencies back so that they can devalue them and get and turn the coin. Right now, the hard euro is just making life very difficult for Greeks to become competitive again. You cannot. Well, first of all, Greece is a tourist country. That's their prime motive force. And nobody can afford to go to Greece anymore. You just can't. It's patent too expensive. What they need to do is have a drachma that they can devalue by 50%, and suddenly you and I can go back to Greece.
Interesting.
There you go. And you know, we're really starting to see these problems come to a head, and probably as a result, investment banks have been making a killing owning gold on euro terms. And Dennis, I remember that's a strategy you recommended last time we spoke in June. Do you see the euro crisis sort of continuing to make that a very viable strategy for the rest of the summer?
Well, the problem with that is that it's been a wonderful trade. It worked phenomenally well. People laughed at me rather openly. Why would you buy gold in euro terms? Well, because I wanted to hedge away the dollar risk, and I wanted to also, by being short of the euro, I wanted to hedge out the risk of the European Union breaking apart. And you're seeing that happen right now. Gold in euro terms, gold in sterling terms, gold in almost any currency terms has gone demonstrably higher. The problem that I now see with that is that this past week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, as gold was getting very strong and the euro was actually weakening for a couple of days, suddenly that became, owning gold in euros became the de rigueur trade. I couldn't turn on CNBC, I couldn't turn on Bloomberg, I couldn't turn on Canadian business television without somebody telling me how brilliant, how good we should be. The gold in euro trade was. It's become awfully crowded.
Right. Yeah. That might be a signal there.
What did Yogi Berra once say about a restaurant? Said nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. That's the way I feel about the gold trade right now. I'm not going to go there anymore. It's too crowded.
Right. So, I mean, these nominal highs we're seeing, you don't see those pushing much higher?
No, I really don't. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But there's too many people involved in the trade.
Do you have an eye on the silver market right now at all?
I don't trade silver. It's too volatile for me. I'm an old dog, and I can't trade things that move 3 and 4% in a day. I just won't do it.
Okay.
I'll let others who are wiser or dumber than I am, I'm not sure which, trade silver. I don't trade silver.
Right. What was your take on, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's appearances on Capitol Hill over the last 2 days?
I thought he was misunderstood. I think too many people read into his comments that QE3 was coming right around the corner. It's just not true. The minutes of the FOMC meeting made it abundantly clear that they will keep the possibilities of further easing moves on the table. They're not going to do it right now, and unless the economy gets materially weaker, they're not going to do QE3 at all. I actually thought that the Fed chairman, first of all, what is harder than being the Fed chairman and appearing before the idiocy of Congress? I mean, that's got to be the hardest job in the whole world, because you have to answer questions as circuitously and as rhetorically flourished as you can, so that nobody can pinpoint much upon you. He's taken to task for being a tad too optimistic earlier this year for the economy. But if the Fed chairman had ever come out and said, you know what, I'm a little concerned about the economy, my God.
Disaster, right?
Oh, it'd be a disaster. The next tick on the S&P futures would be 15 handles lower.
Now,
he can't ever say, I think we have problems.
Yeah, certainly not. Now, did you catch the Bernanke-Ron Paul gold exchange comments?
Yes, and honestly, I thought Dr. Bernanke handled himself very well. I'm in a school of thought. I've been a gold bull for 3 years. Okay, let's first of all understand that. But I, with Dr. Bernanke, think gold is not money. Gold's an asset, and it's not money. And I thought his debate with Mr. Paul was perfect when he said, "Why not use diamonds? Do you think diamonds are money? No, they're an asset. But do they have value? Yes."
Well, it's defined money, right?
I mean, yeah, try to define money.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really highlighted the difference in perspectives there.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
okay.
I actually thought he handled that very well. I thought Mr. Paul came off quite well. I thought it was two very interesting perspectives that were well argued on in a very difficult venue to make such an argument.
A lot of these politicians, though, are concerned, and rightly so, with, you know, the way the economy is sort of muddling along. You know, we saw unemployment numbers come out recently. It's, you know, they're ticking back up. So what, you know, what do you think we are going to see in the stock market? I mean, like, is absent QE3, is there any reason to see it go higher for the rest
sure.
of the year?
Sure. There's all kinds of reasons to continue to see it go higher. Profitability remains high. Unemployment remains low. Show me the relationship between unemployment and stock prices over any protracted period of time. It's non-existent. Now, what's happening here in the United States, the reason why unemployment is low, if you are a business person, a businesswoman, a businessman, and you're facing increased health care costs and you have a left-wing government in power, I like to say that all economics is the study of people's propensity to do something. What's your propensity to add if you know that health care costs are going up, and once you get past 25 employees, you suddenly come under a new regime? If you've got 24 employees and you're doing well, thank you very much, what's your propensity to add that 25th and 26th employee? Zero. It's not going to happen. You'll let your other workers work hard. You'll give them overtime. You'll pay them more money. But you won't expand your employment numbers at all. It's not going to happen. At the same time, I'm sorry, but anybody in the United States without a college education for the next 50 years is in serious, serious trouble. To hope for the return of manufacturing, to hope for the return of Detroit, to hope for the return of Pittsburgh or Akron or Steubenville or any of the industrial cities with their major industries is naive. It's not going to happen. So the people with less than a high school or less than a college education are doomed to failure. On the other hand, those with college educations are doing quite well. Thank you very much. They really are. And that dichotomy is going to continue and only going to widen. That's just a harsh reality.
Yeah, that's a little unsettling.
So does that mean you don't see the dollar appreciating very much, or you see the dollar appreciating? Because if when you see a lower dollar value, that would sort of make manufacturing more like exports a better move for the United States, right?
I think the dollar is going to get demonstrably stronger from here. Demonstrably stronger from here.
Interesting.
Relative to the euro, I think it gets a great good deal stronger. I'm not sure it's going to get stronger. In fact, I'm convinced it won't get stronger against Canada. It won't get stronger against Aussie. It will continue to fall against the Kiwi. But against Euro, the dollar gets stronger.
So the Euro drives the dollar move, especially if you're considering that the stock market is going to be going higher. So are you saying you're sort of expecting another strong earnings season, even after, you know, the just sort of the record quarters that we've seen the last
sure.
couple quarters?
Sure. America's balance sheets are very good. Productive capacities are very good. We've added plant and equipment. We're doing the right things. We're doing all the right things. We're just not going to add any employees.
At the small business level?
Even at the large business level, it's not going to happen there either.
Okay.
So, Dennis, before we go, I got to ask, if it's not gold, what do you have your eye on next?
That's a good question. Stocks, primarily. Old guard, prosaic stocks. You got to like railroads. You got to like fertilizer. You got to like steel. And you know what? I really like regional banks. I really like the regional banks. In a circumstance where the yield curve is as positively sloped as it is and likely to get even more positively sloped, I think the regional banks are a place that one has to look.
Yeah, that's a good point there.
Any of those in particular you're licking your chops at?
Any banks in particular?
Yeah, regional banks.
No, I'm not smart enough to know any regional bank in particular. So just go out. There are two regional bank ETFs. I believe one of those ticker symbols KRE, if I'm not mistaken. Go buy that. That's what I own.
You are listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio. For Matthew Bosler, I'm Luke LeVanway. Dennis, always a pleasure. We had Dennis Gartman, author of The Gartman Letter, on the show today. Dennis, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Talk to you some other time in the future. Cheers.
You've been listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio. For our complete range of programming, be sure to visit radio.benzinga.com.